Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we are speaking with Katie Tynan. She is a partner with MindBridge Partners, and we're going to be talking about her book, Free Agent, The Independent Professional's Roadmap to Self-Employment Success. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Yeah, you know, people talk about being a free agent. You know, I immediately think of baseball, of course. And we've now, of course, we're here in May, and baseball's really been starting and kicking off. So, you know, free agency is something people should think about all during the year, right? Not just certain times a year.
Sure. And think about it. It's not a bad analogy. And one of the reasons I picked the term as the title of the book is that the idea of a free agent, especially a sports player, is this is somebody who has high value. They're somebody who has a set of skills that is particularly relevant to a certain market. You know, if you take Dustin Pedroia and you send him out to go and be an Olympic swimmer, he's probably not going to do all that well. But within the context of baseball, within his position, within the Red Sox organization, he's a tremendously valuable asset. And so I think my goal in trying to encourage people to think of themselves as free agents is to think about where your skills and where your capabilities have the best value, and then to create a career path and an opportunity path that's based around that. So there are a lot of parallels there.
You know, it's interesting, and one of the things that I want to definitely get to is your first chapter, because it really talks about the emerging trends of this free agent labor force that's out there today. First of all, before we get into that, though, a little bit, tell me a little about why you wrote the book. What was the impetus for it? You know, why did you bring this forward in a way so that you could share that with the audience?
Sure. So, you know, I always say I'm a terrible employee. And all of the years that I had jobs, I always felt frustrated after the first 3 to 6 months because I didn't feel like I was doing my best work anymore. I felt like I had come in and I had usually gotten up to speed, and during that time the job was challenging, it was interesting, it was exciting, and then I would reach a point of plateau where I felt like, okay, I'm going through the motions and I'm still doing okay work, but I'm really looking to do more things, I'm really looking to challenge myself, and I could never find that opportunity within the construct of being an employee. And so when I had the opportunity to go out on my own and to start doing more consulting work, I really had this epiphany of, wow, I feel like this is the work that I was always meant to do, and this is the flexibility that I was always looking for to be able to leverage the talents and the skills that I have in a way that's really helpful for someone else and to get paid well doing that. And that was when I ran into this problem, which is it's hard to get your own business off the ground. There's so much to understand. There's logistical issues like business structure, corporate structure, insurance, taxes, all these things. There's also sales and marketing. There's contracts. There's client management. And I didn't find that there were very many really comprehensive resources to help someone take an idea and take a concept and bring that to market as a free agent, as a business of yourself. And so when I was doing it myself, I cobbled together a lot of resources. I asked a lot of people. I talked to a lot of people. But more and more, I felt like there needed to be a guidebook. There needed to be a roadmap that would help people make this transition, because it is becoming more and more common. And as more and more people are out there trying to do this work, I think we have a need in the marketplace for some more guidance and some more resources.
You know, Kitty, it's interesting. The workplace, the work life is changing. I mean, we certainly are seeing that more and more people are dealing with individuals who want to work from home, who want to do things differently than traditional work has been done. What are some of the trends you're really seeing today and how they affect people's thought process in this way?
Well, there's a couple of things really that are happening in the marketplace that are driving this trend. And I want to say, first of all, there's been a lot of press in the last couple of years about this sort of tsunami of freelancers. But the reality is that, depending on whose numbers you're looking at, between 15 and 30% of the workforce has always operated in this independent space, whether it's contractors and freelancers or entrepreneurs or people who start very small businesses. You have a cohort of people who are not employees. And of course, the IRS measures them differently. The Bureau of Labor Statistics measures them differently. So it can be hard to get your head around who they are. But there are a lot of people out there who are working in this way. But there have also been some factors that have come up more recently that have driven more interest in this. So part of that is technology. You can't deny the fact that technology exists today that allows us to work flexibly, that allows us to work from any location. And what that has done is allowed companies to really reach out beyond their own geography when they're sourcing talent. So companies have realized that they can find talent really on a global scale, and so they're interested in doing that. But also for individuals, more and more what we've seen over the years is you have two income families, and when both people are working, it's tremendously difficult to deal with things like childcare, to deal with things like household chores, and so individuals are also really interested in having a more flexible relationship with their employers and a different relationship with their jobs. So we don't separate anymore the way we used to, work from home. We don't draw that line and say, when I'm at work, I'm at work, and when I'm at home, I'm at home. We have technology that has blended those two things, and we have situations where people want to be able to work more flexibly and define the hours that work best for them. So what that's doing is, from both ends of the spectrum, driving an interest in this. And then at the legislative level, we also have things that are disconnecting individuals from the need to have an employer. So once upon a time, you know, 50 years ago, employers were the way you had your retirement. And 80, 90% of the Fortune 500 and Fortune 1000 companies had fixed benefit pension plans. But that ended, and now we have 401ks, we have portability with retirement. We have the Affordable Care Act, which has allowed people to purchase health insurance without having to go through an employer. And so as we start disconnecting those pieces that make it so necessary to have an employer, people who want to choose to work for themselves have the tools to do so. So it's a number of factors that are really driving what I would say the why now and why are we talking about this right now sort of issue.
You know, just to tap onto that for a few seconds, it's interesting. I've had a number of guests on the show that have talked about that type of trend, correct? And one of the things that we're seeing is, and I don't remember which guest talked about it, there is this disconnect between people who are working sometimes in manufacturing and want that type of lifestyle, but it can't be. Right, because they can't necessarily leave their shift, which is
right.
9 to 5 or 7 to 3 or whatever it may be. And there is this a little bit of connection between those two groups that are causing a little bit of conflict in the workplace when people move to different places because they have an expectation of what they used to do. Have you seen any of that in terms of, you know, this a little bit of a backlash? I know certainly we've heard about it at Yahoo and some of the other companies, but what are you hearing in the marketplace about some backlash to this?
Yeah, so it's sort of fascinating, the different perspectives on this trend. You know, I take a very positive perspective on this for individuals. I see that this is a great opportunity for individuals to be able to define their own careers, to be able to define their own time slices that they want to spend on work, and really to be able to have more control over the work that they do. But there is a concern, and it is a valid concern, that part of the reason that we have, for example, unemployment insurance, and we have some of these requirements for employers to contribute into those systems, is because we know that individuals don't necessarily have power as it relates to companies that may have lawyers and they may have other assets that an individual doesn't have. So there's legitimate concern about exploitation and about the idea that companies could replace full-time employees with contractors, and that would cost them less money, and they wouldn't have to pay benefits, and they wouldn't have to worry about letting people go when they need to. So there is a legitimate concern from the perspective of advocating for individuals. and making sure that people are not getting taken advantage of. And that I completely understand. But with that said, I think that you are also seeing an erosion of the benefits that individuals get who are operating as employees. So, you know, it's no bed of roses to be an employee anymore. It's not like you're getting expense accounts and huge benefit plans that don't cost you anything and extensive vacation pay. So it all becomes a balance there. The other issue that you brought up is industry specific. So there are industries where flexibility is not as much of an option. So as you said, with manufacturing, you cannot really say, I'm going to do my line job from home. But what I think that companies need to start thinking about, even in those sectors, is how to get away from some of these legacy 40-hour-a-week shift ideas that we have lived in the past and start creating some of these more flexible constructs so that even if you're not talking about people working from home, you're still talking about people being able to have a choice in the number of hours a week that they work and in sort of how they construct their schedules. And we've heard a lot about that recently related to retail stores. So you heard very recently in the last couple of weeks that I think it was Starbucks had a big issue over their scheduling system because they use a lot of part-time employees. And their scheduling system defines who's working when based dynamically on what's happening in the marketplace and what they expect in terms of customer business. So they have these very smart systems that say, well, we need three people on the shift, but only for 4.5 hours, and then we can drop down to two people. So suddenly you're having people who are part-time employees who are not necessarily making huge hourly wages having schedule inconsistencies that make an uproar in their lives. So there are challenges to this. It's not as simple as people just snapping their fingers and saying, I'm going to make my own hours and I'm going to make my own work and my life. But I do think that from an individual perspective, there's a lot of ability for an individual to decide that this is the path they want to pursue and then go down it and pursue it.
Right. And I do think that you're right. The trend is changing. The tide has shifted. And we do see that millennials as well as Gen Z, which is getting ready to come into the marketplace or just beginning to come into the marketplace right now, I do think differently. And they connect more with others, and they have learned more over the internet in different ways of what actually is a good way to work. And so it is going to be an emerging trend that continues to grow, and I think you're going to see that in the future. We're talking with Kitty Tynan. She is a partner with MindBridge Partners, and her book, Free Agent, The Independent Professional's Roadmap to Self-Employment Success. Boy, that is a mouthful. I'm not going to lie. That's a mouthful, Katie, but it's all good. It's all good. So tell me about your take on what a free agent really should be today.
That's a great question, and I think that's part of the struggle. I just wrote an article recently called Please Don't Call Me a Freelancer, because I think we have an issue in this community of labels. So when you say, what should a free agent be today, I can immediately come up with four different labels that you find commonly in the marketplace. So one of those is freelancer. But freelancer comes with baggage, right? The word freelancer is often associated with something people do in between real jobs. It's something you do to dabble. You know, you're dilettante. It's not a real job. And so freelancer tends to be a term that many people who do this on a consistent basis as a career path sort of shy away from. So then the other term that you hear a lot is contractor. You know, okay, well, I'm going to be a contractor. Well, a contractor has an implication that you're getting hired by a company to do a specific piece of work, and you're sort of a mercenary, and, you know, you do what you do, but you don't necessarily run a business. You're just doing a specific job, but you're doing it on a contract basis. The other term we hear all the time is consultant. Now, have you ever heard the definition of a consultant is they borrow your watch to tell you what time it is?
Yeah, no, I've definitely heard that, of course.
Yeah. And so I think consultants have sometimes a bad reputation for charging a lot of money to tell you something you already know. And then you also have this entrepreneur label, which is associated generally with people who are building businesses, not just out operating on their own. So the idea of a free agent, and the reason I deliberately chose that term as opposed to freelancer or any of the other ones, is because I think we do need a new term to describe people who are in this space because they want to be here, because it's a long-term proposition, because they want to add value to organizations and do their best work. But they're not mercenaries. They're not people who are just trying to charge a huge price and get away with telling you something you already know. They're people who genuinely want to create a career path out of doing their best work.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've certainly heard most of those terms that you bring up in terms of the, you know, the defining of that. I guess my take on it is that, you know, today there are so many terms for so many things only because we seem to have to put a label on things. We seem to have to define things. And it's more stereotypical than it is what it actually is. And so I would ask you, do you see that that's a generational thing? In other words, do you think that as the younger generation continues to move up into the ranks, and is certainly taking more and more positions now in leadership, that mentality will shift over the next 10, 15, 20 years?
Well, I certainly see shifts. Looking into the future, there's all kinds of things that you can see, and one of those is terminology. So I do think that the millennial generation, and as you inferred earlier, Generation Z, the generations coming up, do not think about work in the same way that, for example, the baby boomers thought about work in terms of having a job and a career and the sense that you were defined by your job. So what I see in a lot of cases is one of two things. Either people want to do work that they feel personally connected to. So that's a big shift. Rather than working to make money and then your life is what you do when you're not at work, you see in the younger generations an idea of wanting to do work and spend that 8 hours or 6 hours or 10 hours, whatever it is per day, doing something that has meaning, something that's connected to you personally. I also see a big trend towards wanting to approach different jobs or different opportunities as gigs. It's sort of the backpack career idea that you go and you take a job to learn something specific or to get a new skill or to meet certain people. And then once you've achieved that goal, you sort of put that achievement in your backpack and you move on to the next opportunity. So it's not a matter of expecting that you're going to spend 5, 10, 15 years with one company and you don't expect them to provide your professional development track. And vice versa, what you're seeing on the company side is that companies are having to figure out, how are we training people? What are we providing as professional development? Does it make sense to invest in people if those people are simply going to leave us when they feel like they've gotten the skills that they need? So I think what you see in the future is a burden on the part of the employee or the free agent to manage their own lifelong learning. And so that has a huge implication on the education side. And it's something that universities are struggling with. It's something that corporate trainers are struggling with, which is, how do you shift from feeling like you go and get a four-year degree, which prepares you in some way to launch your career, and then once you get into a job, your professional development and your subject matter expertise comes to you from your company? That now what you're seeing is the shift towards micro-learning and just-in-time learning and individuals being responsible for developing their own portfolio of skills and then carrying that with them. And how do they demonstrate to employers or to potential clients that they have those skills and capabilities? So those are some really big shifts that are happening in the marketplace. And I would say in 10 to 15 years, what you're really going to see is a substantial change in the education space around what we teach people about how careers work, about what we teach people in terms of how to run a business and how to be successful in this environment. And that's very different than what we do right now for workforce preparation.
We're talking with Katie Tynan. She is a partner with MindBridge Partners. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we're talking with Kitty Tynan. She's a partner with MindBridge Partners, and we're talking about her book, Free Agent, The Independent Professional's Roadmap to Self-Employment Success. Kitty, you know, we talked about trends in the first segment. We talked a little bit about why you wrote this book. I want to kind of get into what we would call part two of your book, really the chapters 3 through 12. It talks about how somebody gets started in this situation, how they think about being a free agent and what that means to them. Tell me a little about, or take me through, how this works and how somebody should think about it today.
Well, it's really the meat of the book, David, and it's really the part of the book that I had the intention of writing when I sat down and said, what's necessary here is a roadmap. What's really necessary is for somebody who's interested in going down this path to have a very clear outline to think about what they need to be concerned with in order to make this transition. So if you're sitting right now at your desk as an employee, and you're thinking about all the benefits and great things about working for yourself, you might find that career path really appealing and really interesting, but you might not know how to get there because there are issues with transitioning from having a steady paycheck to finding clients, and then once you do the work, getting paid. One of the first challenges that people have is that as an employee, you get that check every couple of weeks or every month or whatever cycle you get paid on, whereas when you're a free agent, you get paid by your client on whatever schedule you set out with them. So the middle part of the book is really designed to walk someone through that thought process and say, first of all, when you want to go down this path, these are the critical things that you need to understand and know about. Things like business structure, things like how to pay your taxes, things like insurance. Those questions that sort of keep people up at night when they say, wow, I'd really like to do that, but I'm worried that I'm going to get sued or I'm going to get audited or I'm going to get in trouble somehow. And then once you sort of get over that hump of the logistical piece, I've also laid out, because it's hard and important, the idea of how to build a personal brand, how to decide what product are you selling and what service are you providing and how is that making an impact to your client. So how do you write a proposal, for example? When you think about getting a job, you think about writing a resume. When you think about getting a gig as a free agent, you have to think about writing a proposal. And in that proposal, you have to make a clear value proposition to your prospective client. And that leads into the most important thing that people making this transition need to do, which is getting that first client, which can be the hardest thing that anybody does in this transition. The idea that you're going to go out and sell yourself based on your expertise, the first question any potential client is going to ask is, who have you already done this for? So what do you say when you haven't done it for anyone? And I have a great story in the book about a woman who wanted to be a photographer, and she wanted to launch a photography business, and she wanted to expand into wedding photography. So she'd never done it before, and she would go to people and say, let me photograph your wedding, and people would say, well, you've never done it before. I can't see any pictures that you've done. I can't get a sense for your work. So she got together with a bunch of her friends, and they went to the thrift store, and they bought wedding dresses, and they all sort of swapped out around with these dresses and took pictures all over town. And all of a sudden, she has a big portfolio that looks like she's photographed 6 different weddings. But sometimes you have to be really creative in order to get that first opportunity. But once you've done that, then you're really sort of launched and on your way. So the middle section of the book, that section 2, is really all about the stories of people who have been there and gone through these experiences, along with the practical advice of how do you do it? What do you need to think about? What questions do you need to ask?
Well, you know, I think this is an important part of exactly what the question is, right? What exactly do you want out of your career, right? You have to start there, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you're starting there and you're thinking about the checklist of things that are important to you, how do you prioritize those?
Well, I think the very first thing you have to decide, And this gets into something I hear all the time, and in a lot of ways I think it's sort of bad advice, even though it's very prevalent advice, is this idea of finding your passion. So many, many people who want to go out and work for themselves will come to me or will come to career counselors and advisors and say, I have this passion to do X, and I want to follow that passion. And sometimes that's a great path. Sometimes you can be really successful. But it's the wrong perspective because it starts the focus on you and not on what's the need that you are really good at filling. So Mike Rowe, who did the show Dirty Jobs, was asked this question, and he had the best answer that I've ever heard, which is he said, find the need. Find something that people need you to do that you know you can do, and then bring your passion to that work. And I think that's the part that makes people successful in this free agent career path is if you find something that companies need, that businesses need, something that is a pain point for them, something that costs them money, something that's hard for them, that's a great starting point to say, wow, I could do that. I could make that easier. I could make that cost less. And you can build a business around that. But if you want to say, you know, my passion is something specific that's really all about me, it's a much harder sell to a company to say, why should they support me following my passion? You know, maybe I want to take a hot air balloon and go around the world. Well, how am I going to get someone to pay for that? Richard Branson managed to do that, and he managed to turn it into an entire global travel enterprise. But most of the time, if your passion is something that's about you and not about a value you're providing, you're going to have a tough time translating that into work. So really you need to start with what's the need, where can you help, and then bring your passion to that work.
No, I think that's where you do have to start, all right? I mean, because you have to, you talked about it a few minutes ago, about millennials wanting to do for the good, good for themselves, good for the community, good for the environment, good for the world. Good. I mean, that's what they think, right? I mean, that's where they are. So you do have to start there and think about, from their perspective, what are you looking to get out of it? And then build from there into becoming this free agent you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
When do you see an individual taking this thought process? One of the things you talk about is finances and accounting, right? You talk about having your ducks in a row. Because some people can't do this because maybe they're not financially ready to do it.
Well, you know, it's a funny question because on the one hand, the very best time to do this is early in your career because you don't have restrictions like mortgages and kids' college funds and things like that that you need to worry about. So when you're at your most flexible is early in your career. The problem is when you're early in your career, you don't always have a great network. You don't always know what you're best at. You don't have a portfolio of work to show off and say, these are the things I'm good at. You don't necessarily have demonstrable expertise. So while it's a great time to pursue it, it can be hard. With that said, I know a lot of people who start off their career, like that photographer that I mentioned, saying, you know, this is what I want to do, and I don't ever want to have a job. And I think there is a path that you can pursue that's successful going down that road, especially if you can keep your expenses low and you can make sure that you don't get yourself into debt trying to launch something too early in the process. The flip side of that is if you're 10, 15, 20 years into your career, you probably have a pretty solid professional network. You probably have a pretty good ability to demonstrate your expertise in something, and you probably have a case to be made that you can take what you do and go and sell that to a variety of clients. But you also may have the issue of you have higher expenses, you have a higher cost of living and living expectation. So it is a balance. With that said, another person that I interviewed for the book is a guy named Steve Woodruff, and he said that when he switched from being an employee to going out on his own, he had five kids, he had a house, he had a, you know, car payments, all these things, his wife was staying home, you know, he had no safety net, but he did it because he saw the opportunity, he laid a plan out, he understood how he was going to make that transition, and frankly, he had a very honest conversation with his employer at the time to say, this is the route I'm going to take, let's talk about a transition. So the key here is not that there's the right time to do it. The key is that you need to be thoughtful about doing this. So I don't recommend that anybody walk into their boss on a Tuesday afternoon and say, I quit, see you later, without a plan. I think the requirement is that everybody's financial situation is different and everybody's earning capability and ramp up is different. And so what you need to do is be prepared for that. You need to think about having a financial cushion. And ideally, you need to think about how you're going to land that first client before you actually make the jump so that you have a source of revenue and you don't start at zero.
Well, you know, that is the trick. You know, and the other part, you know, certainly for CMA, I've done a lot of discussions with individuals about, they say, I want to start up. I want to start a business. I want to do my own thing. And people always say, look, I want to be a consultant. Okay, that's great. But can you sell? I always start with that basic premise, because if you really can't sell at that point, or if you're not willing to do the sales, a lot of people can do the work, but they don't necessarily want to go out and learn how to sell on how to do the work. And there's a huge difference between, it's a big jump to be a great practitioner and to be a great salesperson. And only a few have the ability to manage both, and that's an important part of this. But they forget about things like insurance. They forget about things like, you know, I have to make sure I do quarterly taxes. I forget all those little things that they don't necessarily know because they've never done it before, and the company's always taken care of it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true, and I think that's what I worry about the most, and again, it's sort of what drove me to write this book, is I don't think that people have a sense even of what questions to ask before they take this leap. So when you say you're going to run your own company, your own micro company, it's an army of one, but you still have absolutely all the same needs that a Fortune 500 company has. You have to have financial rigor. You have to have marketing. You have to have sales. You have to have administrative capabilities. And it can actually be tough when you're the one that's coordinating the meeting, and then you're the one that's showing up to do the sales call, and then you're the one that's doing the work too. Sometimes your clients look at you and go, who are you? So I think it's important for people to understand all of those mechanics and then to strategically decide, does it make sense for me to do all those things? Or should I invest in a virtual assistant? Should I invest in someone to build my website for me? Which parts of this do I feel like are right in my wheelhouse? And which parts do I feel like I need some help with? And the problem that I see too many times is people who think they have to do it all themselves, and they're trying really hard to do something that they're not particularly good at or that they really don't like doing. So as you said, selling can be hard for people. And so if you aren't good at selling, it's really smart to partner up with someone who is really good at selling and see if you can create some sort of partnership where maybe they're the one that's helping you get the business and you're giving a revenue share based on that.
Yeah, there's no question that that's
important.
It's
hard if you're the person who's trying to do everything if you're not good at some of those elements.
Yeah, I think, you know, I talk about a couple colleagues of mine that I know have merged together to do a business, and this is in more of a manufacturing business. And one's really good at sales and one's really good at production. And it works perfectly for them, right? It's just the perfect thing for them to have their small business because they each know each back of the house, front of the house, and they're able to handle that and make that happen. And they build upon each other's strengths. You kind of need to know that when you're doing this.
Yeah, and I certainly think that evaluating your own strengths is an incredibly important part of this journey. So if you're a person who doesn't know a lot about yourself, you're up for some hard lessons in making this transition. And for some people, that's part of the journey. And you're going to learn things about yourself that maybe you didn't expect to. I guarantee, even if you're a very introspective person and you are very self-aware, you're still going to learn things about yourself when you try and figure out how to run your own show. But with that said, if you don't have a good sense of what you can do competently and what you can't, then you're really going to get yourself into trouble. So I always tell people, and this is a part of the book too, you need to assemble a professional team, and you don't pay them full time. You pay them when you need them. So this is your accountant, this is your lawyer, and this is your insurance agent. And those three people you need to have already picked out, and you need to sit down with each of them and say, look, I'm going to need you from time to time, so I want to spend an hour and have you understand my business, have you understand what I'm trying to do, have you understand where I'm coming from. And that way, when the time comes, when I pick up the phone and say I'm negotiating this contract, they're going to understand who you are, and they're going to be able to give you good advice. But you need to have that team already identified, even if you don't need them right away, and even if you don't have the money to pay them right away. Most of those professionals will have an introductory meeting with you for free, because they know that over the long term, as you build your business successfully, you're going to come back to them over and over again. They're going to get revenue. And many of them are also free agents, so many of them can also help you develop the network of professionals you need, even beyond their capabilities, as you grow your business.
Well, you know, you're absolutely correct. And most businesses sometimes forget about the fact that they can get advice from individuals that really can be useful. And remember, that's part of the networking process that they need to have. We're talking with Kitty Tynan. She is from Mindbridge Partners. And we're talking about her book, Free Agent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. And we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Kitty Tynan. She's a partner at Mindbridge Partners, and she has a book, Free Agent, the Independent Professional's Roadmap to Self-Employment Success. Kitty, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, I think this has been an interesting discussion as we continue, I call it the career topics that we do. One of the things that's interesting is, you know, people may be listening, right? They may be listening to the show thinking to themselves, yeah, I'd like to do that. But, you know, I now know I have to look at, obviously, your book, which we, by the way, will have on HRPowerHour.com. They can go there after the show and they can click on it and buy the book, which we highly recommend. Did I do good on that, Kitty? I think, you know,
that's awesome.
That's
thank
all right.
So
good.
Much.
Just making sure. No, because really, that is, you know, the whole point of this is it helps people. That's the whole point of this. But somebody goes in and they say, okay, I need to look at all these things. I need to figure it out financially. I need to figure out if this is my career path. I need to figure all these things out. But once I get there and I start it, what are some of the successful things I need to do to maintain it? And that's what you talk about in the third part of your book. So tell me a little bit about that.
Right. So that's the idea that, you know, there are some people, and I certainly recognize that some people will sort of come through this idea of being a freelancer or being a free agent for a period of time in their life, but not for years and years and years. It may be a transition between jobs. It may be something they try and decide they don't love, but they still need to understand the fundamentals. The third part of the book is really for people who've gotten up and running and who have said, wow, I really enjoy this. How do I get better at this? How do I create a long-term sustainable business out of this that I enjoy that really allows me to have all that flexibility that I went into this career path for? And so in that part of the book, we're talking about a couple of topics that I'm sure people are familiar with on the employment side, but are particularly critical when you're working for yourself. So one of those is work-life balance. How do you figure out, especially when you're working from home, how do you figure out how to create some of those boundaries that allow you to rest and recover and make sure that you're coming fresh to your work, that you're not getting burnt out, that you're not getting frustrated, and that you're not in a situation where you wish you never went down this path. It also is something that professionals who want to get into this for the long term need to think about. How are they developing a network and differentiating themselves, differentiating the work that they do in a meaningful way? Because they're a lot of times working as an independent is a crowded space. So how many attorneys do you have in your network? Probably quite a lot. But if you went and talked to each of them, you know that they have a specialization. Some people are HR attorneys. Other people are accident and injury attorneys. You know, you have corporate law attorneys. You have all kinds of different people who are practicing law in different ways. And they can clearly articulate why they're different and why you should choose them for a specific type of work. So in the third part of the book, what we're really talking about is, great, you've gotten yourself up off the ground. Now, how do you do this over the long term? How do you focus on the things that are most important to you? And how do you do it in such a way that allows you to have a life while you're making a living?
You know, that's the key, isn't it? Because you can think you can do this, you can work on it, you can be, you know, really trying to make it work, but there you do have to live. And so I think it's important for people to realize that it's not necessarily a bad thing. If you've made that decision, you get into it, you try it, right? You've gotten success, but maybe it's something that you aren't that great at. Maybe you do have to go back to be an employee. And sometimes people get a stigma about that, right? They said, well, I tried and I failed. But it's not a failure. It's just a life lesson. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you, and I just talked about this with another colleague, we don't call it failure anymore. We call it pivoting. We've taken that word from the entrepreneurship community, which is a lot of times you think you know something, you think you have a great idea, you think you know what you're going to do and how it's going to sell. And then you take that into the marketplace and you go and talk to some customers, some potential clients, and say, hey, I'd love to do this for you. And their response is, meh, I don't really need that. Or, well, I need that, but I wouldn't pay you for that. So at that point, you have to make a decision on whether you're going to try and continue with that product, which, if it's not going to sell, is going to be tough, or if you're going to say, you know what, I don't want to go back to getting a job. I need to find something that works. And that's an exploration process that I think many people go through. And some people do decide at that point that it's not right for them, that it's hard. But I also think that it's important to understand that trying and failing and correcting and pivoting are part of the process. And if that's happening to you, it means you're doing it right. It means you're doing a good job. You're going out and talking to customers and hearing their feedback and changing your approach. So just because you don't hear exactly what you want out of the gate doesn't mean that your idea is a complete failure and you have to give up. In fact, I think that absolutely anybody who wants to pursue this path can do so. It's just a matter of figuring out the right pitch, the right product, the right process.
And that is half the battle, because, you know, that's the way that someone has to go out there and make it work for them. You know, I'm a big believer in executive coaching. I believe that someone needs to sometimes have a third party look at them and help them through the process. How big is it important to you in terms of your understanding of how people move forward that they partner up with people that can help them, not just from a professional standpoint, but just a career perspective?
So I think support is critical. First of all, I don't know anybody who's successful sitting alone in their house trying to work. Everybody that I know that's successful in this career path is part of a community, whether that's a virtual community or whether it's a physical community. And, you know, we've seen when you talk about trends and you talk about what's happening in the marketplace, look at the explosion of co-working. So 10 years ago in 2007, when the first co-working space opened in the United States, to today, when you have literally over 700 co-working spaces in the United States alone, over 60,000 people who are working with some relationship to a co-working space. So that community of practice has come about to support people working independently. And co-working spaces allow people to make those networking connections, to have people that they can go to, you know, to sort of say, wow, I ran into this. Have you guys ever run into this? And it also allows people to connect with the resources they need. So a coach, an executive coach, can be a tremendously valuable resource for somebody who's going through this transition. And I think a lot of people who stumble do so because they think they have to go it alone. They think that somehow it's like a rite of passage and a badge of honor to run the marathon by themselves. But you know, and I know, every athlete, if we go back to the very beginning of our conversation, every free agent has a team that helps them be successful. So that's a critical part for people who are looking at this as a long-term career path. you can't expect that you're A, going to be successful right out of the gate if you've never done it before, and B, that you're going to be able to be successful without that support team, without that help, and without that encouragement.
You know, I just want to jump back to something you said earlier and alluded to, which is work-life balance, because it's a little bit cliche, right? I mean, it certainly is. Everybody talks about it. What do you mean by work-life balance?
Well, I'll tell you in a very specific sense. One of the things that used to drive me bananas when I had a job was that I couldn't leave the office at 2 o'clock, be there for my son when he got off the bus, and then at 7 o'clock at night, work when it was the time that I had, when it was quiet, when I could focus, from 7 to 11. That's what I do now. I make a schedule that works for me, and it means that I can have my priorities according to the way I feel they need to be, so that I feel like I'm allocating the right amount of time to my work, the right amount of time to my family, the right amount of time to all of the moving parts of my life. So when I say work-life balance, I actually have a friend who refers to it nowadays as a work-life premium blend. You know, it's like your coffee. It's not so much a balance as it is blending the elements together into a life that feels right. I don't always feel when I'm working that I'm working. I'm doing something that I really enjoy. I'm doing with my life what I want to do. And then when I go home and I spend time with my family, I don't feel like that's not working. I feel like that's another piece, another element in my life, and all of those things come together as a whole. So I think it's up to each individual to be able to decide what those priorities are, where you want to spend your time, what's important to you, and then to define your schedule around that. There's nothing that gives you as much flexibility in terms of when you work, where you work, and how you work as working for yourself. You're never going to have an employer who is going to be as flexible as when you work for you. So on the one hand, that means that you have that ability. On the other hand, you don't work less. I don't know anybody who works independently who's working 20 hours a week and, you know, kicking back and saying, wow, I'm making great money and I'm hardly working at all. Everybody that I know works hard.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great?
Well, it would. But at the same time, you know, I think you look at people like Tim Ferriss, who wrote The 4-Hour Work Week, and he really tapped into that sense, right, that people have of, wow, I work too hard, and wouldn't it be great if I could work less? But the reality is most of the people I know who are working for themselves, it's not that they work less. It's that they work when and how feels right to them, when and how they're most productive, and they work on projects and opportunities that they want to be working on. So then it doesn't feel like so much friction between what you want to do and what you have to do.
We're talking with Katie Tynan. She is a partner with MindBridge Partners. We're talking about her book, Free Agent. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we've been talking with Katie Tynan. She's a partner in MindBridge Partners. We've been talking about her book, Free Agent, The Independent Professional's Roadmap to Self-Employment Success. And Katie, I think we've done a great job talking about the book today. How would you like to, in the last few minutes, kind of wrap up and summarize how the book can help people?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, I think people worry about their career. It's natural. We spend a lot of time thinking about what we're doing, why we're doing it, are we doing the right things, are we getting where we want to be. There's a lot of anxiety around work. And so my goal in writing this book and my goal in doing this work is to really uncover this idea that you can work this way, you can define your own career path, and in fact, we're in one of the best times in history for people who want to redefine how they relate to their work and how they relate to their employer. So we're in really what we consider, and I consider, a seismic shift in how businesses and individuals relate to one another. And it's a great time for people to look at what they do and say, do I like this? Do I love this? Is this what I want to do with my life? Am I making the money that I want? But also, am I missing out on the opportunity to live because I'm spending so much time working? And we hear that theme a lot lately. You know, I'm sure you've seen a lot of people who are talking about minimalism, who are talking about trying to focus on the right things. The term I really love these days is essentialism, and there's a fantastic book about that, which is, what do you decide is essential to your life to live the way you want to live? And how does work relate to that? So really, for me, this isn't just so much a roadmap as it is a philosophy that says we'd all be a lot happier if we felt like the work that we do on a regular basis, the time that we spend on work, is time that contributes towards our achieving the goals that we want to achieve in our lives. So that's really the thing that I'd want to close with, is anybody who's thinking about this path, anybody who's thinking about feeling frustrated in their career or with their job, really needs to think about what is that essential value that they want to see out of life. And if this is the path you want to pursue, it's absolutely achievable. Anybody can figure out what value they can create. Anybody can figure out how to create a career in this way.
We've been talking with Katie Tynan. She is a partner in MindBridge Partners. We've been talking about her book, which I highly encourage you go to hrpowerhour.com after the show. You'll see her information, you'll see her picture, you'll see her book, and you'll be able to click on it and buy right there, or at least read more about it, or rehear the show. If there was a couple segments here that you think that, hey, I need to go back and listen to, you'll be able to do that. It'll be podcasted there. Katie, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
And now your HR tip of the week. Five things fact finders expect from your documentation. This is according to TrendHR.com. First, when you document, you're not just writing just for the moment. The following parties will eventually be looking at your documentation: employee, opposing counsel, administrative agencies like the EEOC or the Department of Labor, a judge, a jury. So do your documentations meet these five expectations? One, being professional. That means complete sentences and good grammar, appropriate punctuation, and all the blanks filled in. That they're clear, easily understood, brief and to the point, and contain facts. Three, that they're fair. Whether they capture the fairness of the situation, meaning are they honest, no piling on, are the disciplinary consequences appropriate for the misconduct? Four, be rational. Articulate the business-based reason for the decision you wrote down. If necessary, let people see your reasoning. Make sure that the handbook language is included and provide specific examples. And finally, be timely. The more time it takes for you to write it down, the less detail you're going to remember. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have a special guest. His name is David Stearns, and he is the president of Dale Carnegie Maine. Why is Dale Carnegie still relevant today? As a matter of fact, it's even more relevant today than ever. It's because communication, sales training, and leadership development are critical in today's environment. That's what we're going to be talking about on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.